Hello, everyone. This is G Money from the Black Ops team, along with Booker T today. And today's topic, vote. We've got about 11 more days before the election, the presidential election of 2020. And we want to make sure we send the message that it is important for all of you to vote and to understand the game of voting. What I mean by that is people just look at certain things, but we want you to look at the real underlying concern in reference to voting. And you need to understand how you have an impact in the voting game. And you do if you choose to vote, but you have to be informed in reference to why you have such an impact. Okay, Booker, let's go.
The question is always whether or not they have been taught and or schooled in the true game that's being played. Faith without works is dead. So, but let me say this too. I think that because, you know, again, as we continue to explore this whole premise around voting and the importance of it and what have you, I think that there is definitely a need to raise the awareness and the knowledge and information base of our people around this political process. Because, see, a lot of this was taken away. I remember, you know, you grew up watching I'm Only a Bill, Schoolhouse Rock, where they gave you some of the aspects associated with it. Then you had in school social studies and other things that tried to help you. Civics, that's what I'm looking for. Civics. And other things that helped you understand the aspects associated with the Electoral College and the different branches of government, et cetera, et cetera.
So let's go through that now. Let's make sure we take people through that as clearly as possible. So when someone says, does my vote really matter? I think it was one of the first questions you asked. Does my vote really matter? I don't like any of the current candidates. Nothing really changes. My vote doesn't matter. No matter who is elected, it won't change or affect my life. I've heard that multiple times, which I think is just idiotic. My political party takes my vote for granted. And that could be true. I'm going to vote for a third party or write in a candidate. That's just asinine. Because you know that person has no chance of winning. So why even go vote?
So let's break down this vote game. There are basically, as you hear on Schoolhouse Rock, three branches of government. Executive, which is basically your president, vice president on a federal level. Then there's your legislative, which is your Senate. In your house, or we call Congress, and last but not least, the judicial. Those are your three branches. Now, those three branches play themselves out across the three levels of society. The first level is your local level. Your second level is your state. And the third and final level is the U.S. or federal. All three branches play themselves out across all three levels of society, local, state, and federal. But these three branches are significant when you talk about an election. What most people focus on is the executive branch and sometimes the legislative branch. But the game of voting is all in the judicial branch. That is where the game is won or lost. And that's why you need to vote, because the judicial matters. Most people think when you vote on the executive level, if the Fed is for president, if the state is for a governor, at the city or local level, it's the mayor. They think that's where most of the power is. That's not correct. Some people think it's in the legislative. In federal, it's Congress. At the state, it's your state house. At the local level, it's your city council. But again, that's not where the power is. The power is in the judicial. The judicial has the U.S. Supreme Court at the highest level of the Fed. They have state Supreme Courts at the state level, and they have local courts, but also, or right below the Supreme Courts, both at the state level and the federal level, they have the appellate court, and that's a huge decision maker. So if even someone passes a law, is at the state level or the federal level. If a legislative branch passes a law, a state court or a federal court can overturn it. Even if a executive, president, or governor, or mayor creates an executive order, that too can be fought in the courts and overturned. So who has the most power? The judicial. You see, mayors, governors, presidents, they have term limits and they have to be voted in every term. Legislators have to be voted in either every 2 years or every 6 years. But federal judges, those Article 3 federal judges, those are lifetime appointments. There is no going to the election booth and voting them out. Once they're appointed and sit in their position, they're there until they decide to retire. Nothing can change that. They're there for life. And the impact they're going to have over the next 40 years or so of their term will mean a lot for both you and your kids. There are currently 870, that's right, 870 federal court judges that what we call Article 3 judgeships. 870 Article 3 judges. Well, what does that mean? An Article 3 judge is a judge that sits on the bench for the rest of their life. These judges are nominated by the president and then voted on by the Senate. And if so, approved and put in position. 870 judges. Now, out of those 870, 9 of them currently sit on the Supreme Court. 179 sit on the Court of Appeals. 673 sit in a district court. And another 9 sit in the Court of International Trade. That's 9 on the Supreme Court, 179 on the Court of Appeals, which is huge because the Court of Appeals hears the significant cases that will impact all of us. And the other 673 sit on district courts and another 9 on the Court of International Trade. The current Supreme Court has 3 liberals and 5 conservative judges. And we're about to stick another conservative judge on.
And the one who's coming on to the Supreme Court calls herself a constitutional originalist. Now, do you know what that means?
I would interpret that to mean that I am interested in the original intent of the founding fathers as it relates to the Constitution.
Okay.
There's a whole lot of interpretation.
Right. Okay. So that's a good interpretation from you in reference to what that means.
Okay.
So now let's realize, were blacks free when the Constitution was written?
Absolutely not.
Right. There is nothing in the Constitution that speaks to blacks. Everything that speaks to blacks are the amendments after the Constitution.
Correct.
Putting someone on the Supreme Court who's a constitutional originalist.
On top of that, she also presided in a case where she was the judge, and a supervisor called a black employee the N-word. And she said that in itself did not create a hostile work environment and throughout the case. So somebody can call you the N-word and that's not a hostile work environment?
What does that tell you about anything related to black people?
It's going to be struck down. Was she voting against it?
Right. Because it's not in the original Constitution. Yeah. I mean, what you're talking about is a Supreme Court Justice who wants to take us back to The Handmaid's Tale. I'm not sure if you ever see that show.
I'm familiar with it. I've never seen it. But okay. You know what? Let me just say this too. She's talking and speaking in code. And there are those that code is directed to that understand exactly what it is that she said. Now,
correct.
For those who are not as politically astute, they may think, well, that's a good thing because the Constitution is the basis upon all of the freedoms that we've achieved to this point in time. They don't understand.
Correct.
That's just like saying that I'm a conservative and anything they got to go with doing and advancing your rights as a person of color, I'm definitely not in favor of.
Okay, so I do agree that we should never just give up our vote, right? Our vote has to mean something and it has to be earned. I agree with that 100%. But I also know there are 2 teams to choose from. Because when you're 13% of the population, you can't have your own team.
Right.
You join a one of the other team, hoping to sway the balance, which hopefully gets you quid pro quo, gets you something for that. Okay? But I'm going to go back to your first question. What has voting gotten me? Not as much as it should. But the one thing I do know, who's ever in that seat at the president and the Senate will determine the judicial. And that I know is critical. And that's going to have an everyday impact on you. Judicial always does.
I mean, think about it. Think about one of the biggest issues we have right now. Social injustice. Well, injustice implies what? The legal system. Judges. Justice. You can't get social justice if you don't have the judges that will support your ideology. You're not getting social justice from a president. You're not getting social justice from a Congress. They can pass bills into laws, but those laws have to be upheld at the court. They have to be acted on in the courts. That's where you get your justice. So that's why it's imperative that we focus on this justice system. Because in the last 4 years, we've gone in reverse. This president, President Trump, has placed over 200 Article 3 federal judges over the last 4 years. Out of 870, he's placed over 200. Out of those 200, he's placed 59 in the appellate court, the most important court that makes most of the decisions. It's not the Supreme Court, it's the appellate court. Now, why do I say the appellate court's more important? The appellate court listens to or decides on close to 50,000 cases per year. The Supreme Court, 50 to 80. Now think about that. The appellate court hears 50,000 cases a year that determine things for us as a people. The Supreme Court, 50 to 80 a year. So the appellate court is huge in reference to its impact to people. And oh, by the way, out of his 59 appointees, there was not one black person as a judge that he nominated for the appeals court. Not one. This president, this administration, has placed zero black judges in that role. When people say Hillary or Donald Trump didn't make too much difference, it made a ton of difference. It made the difference of 200 more really pro-conservative judges in the judicial system that we can't remove until they retire. We just went back, people. 200 conservative judges are now going to make the decisions that impact all of us. And if you think about it, when do you see an outcry or a march or a large negative reaction from the black community? It's usually based off of what? It's usually based off of a court decision, right? Whether it was Rodney King, whether it was OJ, whether it was Breonna Taylor, and there'll be more. We've got the George Floyd case coming. Those are the ones that we have the biggest reaction because it shows that this country has not given us justice yet. Well, we just let this president put in 200 judges who are definitely not going to give us the justice we're looking for. They're going in the opposite direction. So all those things we're looking for, social justice, police reform, voting rights versus voting suppression, health care for all, climate change, affirmative hiring practices, reproductive rights, LGBTQ rights, reparations, or an equal bite at the apple. All those things, they go to the court system, people. And if you don't have those judges, we just got 200 very conservative judges that will not likely decide in our favor on any of those things. We just step back, way back in the time machine. That's why voting is critical. It's for the judicial, which will decide and determine what laws are maintained or overturned. And these judges, the last 200 or so that Trump has now put in place, they will be around for another 40 years making decisions for us in a very conservative way. That's why voting counts. Voting's important. I don't care who's at the top of the ticket. I'm going all the way blue, all Democrat, all the way down. Why? Because at the state level, it's important for the judges. At the federal level, it's important for the judges. And at the local level, it's important that that AG, that attorney general, you know, that person who's not going to file charges against the police when something bad happens. We need the right AG in at the local level. I need to make sure we've got the right people in place who are going to make the right decisions that we can uphold in a court of law.
You used this term earlier, the quid pro quo. So, yeah, you place your vote and someone turns around and they get into power. The question is, yeah, what are you going to get after they've turned around and they've gotten into power? And you got to understand that if all you did was vote, then chances are whatever political promises that were made to you in your particular group, they're going to fall by the wayside and they're not going to be fulfilled. But there is a ripple effect. And I think that that's where you're going. There is a ripple effect that takes place when there is a change in power, whether it's going to the Democratic side or to the Republican side, and that doesn't take place on that day that the election is determined. It is over the next 4 to 8 years, and sometimes because of the fact that when we talk about the appointees of judges, it could be over the next 30 to 40 years, the ripples that may impact our community in that regard.
We all know that Republican judges are more likely, 70% more likely, to give blacks more time or deny voting rights or to agree with suppression rules across the country. So they are holding back your rights as an American because you're black. And that's what it shows. So if there's a toss-up, Hillary, Donald Trump, you take Hillary, fool, for the simple point that you're going to get 200 judges that are more likely to decide in your direction. An example I give of that is Texas. When Texas did one ballot box per county, they fought it at the district court level, federal. They won the Democrats in reference to getting more ballot boxes per county in Texas when the Governor Abbott was trying to suppress the vote, especially in Houston, where there are 4.5 million people and there's one ballot box for the whole county. It don't make any sense. Okay. So I'm sorry. So when it went to the district court in Texas, federal district court, the Democrats won and they were going to put more ballot boxes in the counties. They then appealed it to the appellate court, right? Where three Trump appointees turned it down and said, nah, it's fine the way it is. So that's where it matters. You had three Trump appointees sitting there and said, you know what? One ballot box is good per county, even when that county has 4.5 million people. Now, how does that make sense? Unless you are okay with voter suppression. So you better believe these appointees, whether they're Republican or Democrat, they follow that party's norms. So that party's about voter suppression. Guess what those judges are going to do? Agree with that.
Yep.
Exactly. If those people are against health care for all, guess what they're going to do? Take it out. If those people are for law and order versus the justice or the injustice served on black people from police, guess what's going to happen? Law and order is going to win. So if you don't get anything right, if you think they're the same and they damn sure aren't, the difference shows up in the courthouse and everything is decided in the courthouse. Every law is fought and won or lost in the courthouse. Okay? Sentencing is in the courthouse. All right. All those things happen in the courthouse. So you can, someone said, well, Donald Trump's okay. If you're a black man voting for Donald Trump, you're just an idiot. Because there's nothing he's given you that you can show me. But what I can show you is 200 conservative judges, not one of them black on the appellate court level, which is significant because the appellate court hears most of the significant things that will change the laws that impact you.
Yes.
See, there you go, bringing up Ice Cube. Now, this is a topic we're going to talk about on a different podcast in more detail. But to me, there are two kinds of folks in the black population that are damaging the black population. That is tokens and pawns.
Tokens and pawns. They're pawns for white supremacists. Mm. Okay. Or they're tokens. They're being used for some ability for someone else to cash in.
Right.
That was Ice Cube's scenario.
Right.
Okay. They used you, dog. Just admit it. Like, they used you. They played you because you don't know this game. Mm. And you shouldn't be stepping into a game you don't know shit about. Mm. What you should do is support the people who are in the game and know the game. Mm. That's how you should leverage your celebrity. You don't know nothing about politics. Mm. So get with someone who knows it and plays the game and figure out how to support them with your celebrity to move forward our agenda. Mm. But you think you the first person to come up with some good ideas of what black people need?
The Congressional Black Caucus, a group of politicians made up of all the congressmen and women who sit in both the House and the Senate for the United States. That's what the Congressional Black Caucus is. He's been around since 1969. That's right, 1969. And all the things that were in Ice Cube's contract with Black America, all those things that were constitutional, have already been presented and proposed by the Congressional Black Caucus. A lot of those bills have gone to the floor, and Mitch McConnell has killed them. So you need to understand, we've gone down this road before. There's a group that does this professionally every day. They didn't just wake up 4 months ago and say, oh, we need to do something. And the interesting thing is when Roland Martin told them, hey, by the way, Congressional Black Caucus has worked on all these things, he was like, oh, well, good. We'll keep up the good work. He ain't even know that this stuff has been worked on already by another group that does this for a living. Well, Ice Cube said the Trump campaign went with them, and the Biden plan said they wait until after the election. Okay, so let's go over that. The Trump campaign didn't have anything. They created that BS plan called the Platinum Plan. And really, Platinum Plan? Like, that's not racial? After talking to Ice Cube and tried to add these bullets, make it sound like they were giving us $500 billion. That's the infrastructure budget. That's not money going to black people. That's money for the infrastructure. Black people might get some of that eventually, but there's nothing that says we're going to get any percentage of it or any certain amount of it. That's it. Well, Joe Biden's campaign didn't meet with them. They said they'd meet with them after the election. Well, Joe Biden had a 22-page document, Lift Every Voice and Sing. That's their document for the black agenda. It's 22 pages. They met with some people. They put some stuff together. There's some significant things in there, specifics. Not a page and a half like Donald Trump's Platinum Plan with some broad bullets that don't mean anything. And oh, by the way, as Joe Biden campaigns it, it only makes sense to meet if we win. Because if we win, then we can put these things into place. Or talk about changing our agenda. But we've already shared what our agenda is.
Stay in your lane. All right. So, yeah, you got me started on that one. But anyway, my whole point is, because I just can't stand it. Like, we refuse, again, to aggregate. And they're always going to pick off one or two of us. They've been doing it for years.
I like to use the term truth has no master, which means that truth is out there, but you have to seek it out. There is, you know, Trump has termed this term fake news. And since we use Fox, yeah, there's a whole lot of that coming from that particular network.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
But it is incumbent upon us to make sure that we do the necessary research. We got to put in the work, because there are forces that are out there that are trying to mislead us. They're talking about Russia's impact on the election and other things that they're doing by virtue of social media in an effort to steer things in a direction of whoever that highest bidder is they're choosing. But if we don't understand that these are the kinds of things that are going on, there's a time when people would say, there's no way that the government could have been involved in the drug trade. It's the government. There's no way. And then what do you find out? CIA involved in the drug trade. What do you find out? That there's numerous things that we as individuals, because we thought that just because there's a moral fiber that runs through our being, that other people play by that same set of rules, and they don't.
That's correct.
But we also have a problem too, as a community. And that problem is coming together, aggregating our wealth, working together, aggregating both our resources and aggregating our strength, our power. Viewing ourselves as a monolith, we instead want to say that we're individuals, we're all different, versus no, we're a strong united front. And we can, and we are different, but we should show a unified front to create what? A monolith of strength. Now, for those of you that think we should not be a monolith as black people.
We don't need to be a monolith. You need to be a monolith, people. They treat you like a monolith when they stop you on the street, when the police do. They treat you like a monolith when you go get sentenced in front of their courts. They treat you like a monolith when you go to the bank to get a loan. So if they treat you like a monolith, when they discriminate against you, should you not solidify your resources, aggregate your resources, and become a huge block of significance versus individuals that they can separate and rationalize? Absolutely. Every other community does a monolith. So think about it. We as a people spend, I think it's close to $1.3 trillion.
Right. Okay. Year.
Mm-hmm. We will be the 10th largest nation if we stood by ourselves. And the number one nation of color as it relates to our economics of $1.3 trillion. And we can't get simple things done, but we don't aggregate, which is why we have the problem. We let them separate and divide us.
But let's get back to this game, the game within the game. This vote system, this voting process, it's all about the judicial.
Most of these situations will be decided at the appellate court level.
Well, and to your point, if they're only hearing between 50 and 80 cases a year, then there's another question about whether or not it would even make its way to the Supreme Court. Because Correct. There's whatever that process, that filtering process it is that they have, it whittles it down to they're only hearing 80 cases. So It, you know, now it's a crapshoot as to whether or not they're going to actually even hear this case. But now, you know, it's becoming clearer as to why earlier in the podcast, you called out the appellate court as a key, you know, a key aspect in this chain of courts. And, you know, so we talk about the wins that you could make on the state level, but then it gets appealed to the appellate court. And that's where the final decision in most of the cases are made, because the Supreme Court doesn't hear but so much, you know, right. So many, so few cases.
Right. And think about it, right? The district court is like a regular court. You go in, there's a judge that sits there. He listens to your case. He listens to the arguments from the attorneys, and then he makes a decision. Now, you don't like that decision, you can appeal it to the appellate court.
Okay.
Yeah. Now, when it goes to the appellate court, that is not a bunch of attorneys usually arguing. That's briefs submitted. And it's a 3-judge panel that makes a decision. 3 judges make the decision. So if you have 2 Democrats and 1 Republican, typically it's going to come out in a liberal kind of decision. Those 3 that make that decision in the appellate court, they're presidential appointees. They're nominated by the president. They're voted on and in place. Those are lifelong terms. They're there for life. You gotta remember, there's a state court system, there's a federal court system. The state court system has the same kind of hierarchy. You got the regular local, then you have state appellate court, and then you have the state Supreme Court. And a lot of those things, after they might go through the state Supreme Court, actually get pushed to the U.S. Supreme Court. But to say your vote doesn't count or it doesn't matter, it does. Even if you don't like the person at the top of the ticket, they are going to do right by you in placing the judges you want. And those judges can have impact on you for the next 40 years. So does it matter? Hell yeah.
This is why the white evangelicals stay with Donald Trump. They don't like him. They don't like what he's doing. But he's placing these super conservative judges that are evangelical-like in their decision-making and taking us back to Handmaid's Tale. That's why they deal with Donald Trump. Why is this such a focus for the Republican Party? Why is it so important that they stack the courts with all these judges who are going to be there for the next 40 years or so? Why is it that it was important for them to block a lot of Obama's nominations for judges and to keep those posts open until they had a Republican president? Well, I can tell you the reason why. They know the statistics. They know the change in the demographics. What does that mean?
People 0 to 14 years of age. So newborn to 14 years of age. 50% of the U.S. population is of color for that age group. 14 and below are people of color. That means what? That means that the majority, being white, has already started to change. In the group 14 and below, the majority is no longer white. So let's play that out. In 4 years from now, that means kids 18 and below will be of color. That means basically almost all those elections are not getting any easier if your major constituents are white males, Republican Party. But what you can do is place these conservative judges in the court for the next 40 years that uphold all of your legacy traditions for white males. And you could be living in a country similar to apartheid, where the majority actually are more minorities or people of color, but they don't have the court system. They can't get anything changed. They might be the majority in reference to population, but they are minority in reference to power, because the power is in the court system.
Thoughts, Booker?
One of the things that it is clear is that in this political game, the Republicans have been playing the long game. And with their appointees from a judge standpoint and the runway that they've got in front of them, I think that in one of our subsequent conversations, I think you brought to my attention that the age of the appointees was in the early 40s, where with the Democratic appointees, they were older, so therefore they had shorter runway. But we're talking about the fact that they've got a good 30 to 40 years ahead of them if they chose to turn around and to stay into those positions, for the extent of their particular appointment.
Yeah, on average, the Republican judges that are nominated are typically 8 to 10 years younger than their Democratic counterparts, which means they can serve another decade longer.
Right. So, as you know, definitely during this administration, our community has definitely woken up again to this political process, and individuals are now more interested in understanding what it is that they can do. So I said that first statement only to say that we're going to need to definitely be on the lookout with all of these conservative appointees of judges around cases that are being heard, like this, the example that you gave for Texas and the voter suppression with only one ballot box, et cetera, so that we can see that it's clear that we can't find ourselves in this position again. You talked about earlier about the need for us to aggregate. And when it comes to these types of decisions, we represent ourselves as a monolith and as a voting group and a block. And we move in unanimous, direction in terms of how it is that we're going to affect change on this scale by benefiting or hurting one party versus the other. I think that the other thing that we have to couple those things with is we need to get into the financial aspect of politics as well. It's not just about us turning around and casting this vote. This vote in your ballot is very critical. It's very important. But putting together that with some financial wherewithal, it gives it that extra oomph. And if we're doing it in a block, then now we're starting to take some of that $1.3 trillion and utilize it in a manner that is designed to push our group forward. So I think that, those are some of my thoughts in terms of, what we need to consider in terms of how we move in this political space. And we need to be ever vigilant about continuing to understand this political game and make sure that on no matter what level it exists, whether it's the local level, the state, the federal, or, all the way up to the executive level, we hold the individuals that make it into office accountable. And if that means that whether it's this next coming election, put the presidential election to the side, on a local level, if individuals aren't moving in your best interest or in an effort to further some of the concerns that your community has, that we get those individuals out. And we strive to hold individuals accountable to our needs. Every other group does it. It's past time for us to start doing it.
Right. But again, you can't do any of that unless you vote.
Now, here's what I would do if I was in charge of the DNC. If we won the presidential election, maintained the House, and won the Senate?
Please stack the courts. Okay. And here's what I mean by that. 20, I don't care. They got 6 right now. Make it 20. 14 Democratic, lifelong. Make those appointees 40 to 50 year olds. Make them across all colors and creed. Give them an LGBTQ. Get a Latino. Get a real brother in there. Not no Clarence Thomas. No, not no Uncle Tom. We need some real people of color who are going to make decisions the right way. All those nominations for judges in the federal system, make that happen the right way, right? With liberal judges. Second thing, get rid of the Electoral College. Make it popular vote, because you disenfranchise people with Electoral College. If I'm a Democrat sitting in the middle of Alabama, I'm disenfranchised because it's not likely that my vote is going to matter in the presidential election.
Well, what do I mean by that? That my vote won't matter if I'm a Democrat in Alabama voting in the presidential election? Well, again, it's Electoral College. So the majority of votes in that state will determine who gets all the electoral votes for that state. 48 states out of 50 do it that way. Winner takes the whole state and all the electoral votes in that state. Two states do not do it that way. Those two states are Maine and Nebraska. They actually split their electoral votes, and they're split based on who wins each one of the congressional districts. But all the other 48, winner takes all. So if you're a minority in that state in reference to your party, you're not getting any votes, and your vote in the presidential campaign, does it really count? Does it really matter? Question mark. So if Alabama is 80% Republican and 20% Democratic, it's no question that state's going to give all of its electoral votes towards the candidate on the Republican side.
If I'm a Republican in California, it doesn't matter, because there's no way a Republican's winning the state of California in a presidential election. Get rid of the Electoral College. Make it popular vote. Now, truly, everybody's votes count. And oh, by the way, now, these politicians can't just go to 5 different states and talk issues. They got to go to every state and earn your vote. And their vote will matter now as a popular vote versus electoral vote. That's number 2. Third thing, realign the Senate like the House. What do I mean by that? How the hell does South Dakota have the same number of senators as California
when the population is so vastly different?
So South Dakota has 800,000 people. California has 40 million people. That means California has 50 times as many people as South Dakota.
So how do the two senators in South Dakota have the same power that the two senators in California have? That doesn't make any sense. So I'm not saying it's got to get like the House of Representatives, 435 across 50 states. But I'm saying there should be some form of representation. Next, make Puerto Rico and Washington, D.C. a state. Why do that?
Because both territories, Washington, D.C. and Puerto Rico, have representatives that sit in the House of Representatives, although they're not allowed to vote. And oh, by the way, both territories have populations also larger than a lot of our states.
Because now they'd have 2 senators in each one of those places. And those will most likely be Democrats, not Republicans.
Well, again, we've got a long way to go as it relates to educating our people, because there's clearly been misinformation that is out there.
But there's a reason people died for this.
True, indeed.
Can you point to some other things we died for that we don't matter? That doesn't matter anymore. No. We died for freedom. We died for the right to vote.
So yeah, we died for the right to read.
Correct. And unfortunately, we don't take those things as highly as we should, including reading as well.
Right.
Well, thank you, everyone, for sitting in our Schoolhouse Rock of civic studies to talk about why it's important to vote. So next time someone says it's not that important to vote, or they feel kind of impartial to voting, make sure you don't worry about slapping the taste out their mouth. Send them our podcast, and hopefully this will change their mind. Hopefully it's reinforced yours. Make sure you get out and vote. Thanks, everyone. Black Ops out.